Welcome to the Marvel DC Retrospective. I'm Jamie Corrales, and of course, with me is...
Amy Fox.
Yes, and now we're finally going to complete the Fantastic Four Quintet. We just watched Josh Trank's Fantastic Four a couple of days back, and we had a pretty split reaction to it. But before we get into that, why don't we just summarize the movie a little bit, but also go into why Fox decided to reboot this franchise, which clearly hasn't worked before. And if you've checked out Rotten Tomatoes at all, if you've heard reviews, then you know things aren't going all that smooth for it now. Basically, if Fox didn't make a Fantastic Four movie by, I think it was next year, and release it by that time, then they would lose the rights and they would revert back to Marvel. And Marvel would, of course, absorb that into Marvel Studios, and the Fantastic Four would probably join Iron Man and now Spider-Man and Captain America, and they would probably do a really good job at reinventing that. But
instead, we got this.
Yeah, we got this. And just to summarize real quick, Fantastic Four 2015 stars Miles Teller as Reed Richards, Toby Kebbell as Victor Von Doom, Michael B. Jordan as Johnny Storm, Kate Mara as Sue Storm, and Jamie Bell as Ben Grimm, aka The Thing. I want to get what your thoughts were going into this, before you even knew what the verdict was on Rotten Tomatoes, because in the days leading up, there was no score at all. They did not let the critics review the movie until the day of. And that is always very telling as to how that's going to rank on the tomato meter. But when you saw trailers for it, if you saw any trailers for it, what was your opinion on it? What did you think? Were you looking forward to it at all? Did you think, eh, what?
I think I only saw the trailer for it once. I mean, I don't know if it's just because I don't really watch too much like live TV, or because I'm not really active in like social media or what, but I just feel like, especially surrounding like my day-to-day life, there was no real hype about it. But I was just kind of like, eh, I'll watch it, but I wasn't excited about it. I think that looking at the cast, well, I like all of the actors for what they are. I don't really look at any of them and think Fantastic Four,
or you don't think they line up,
superhero, or no. Like, I feel like Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, I think they're more dramatic actors to me.
I don't know about Miles. Well, I mean, I guess because of Whiplash.
Whiplash, yeah. I mean, but that's true. He's been in comedic roles, but I don't know. It's just
He kind of gets, he's in a lot of dramatic roles, but he gets by on kind of like this, I don't want to say charm, but like kind of like the easygoing funny guy, even if it is like a serious dramatic character like the one in Whiplash. Michael B. Jordan, kind of the same thing, but at first I was not looking forward to this movie. It wasn't on my radar at all, and I heard reports about there being reshoots, and if there's reshoots, we of course know that's never a good thing. So I was reluctant to invest any sort of interest in this movie, but then I watched one of the trailers, and I was like, wow, that, you know, there seems to be a really distinct style here. It's kind of like a Cronenberg film in a way, with the how they're toying with multiple realities and the fabric of space and time, and that interested me. So that got me thinking, well, maybe I'll enjoy it. And then, you know, you see all the reviews come in and it's like, ooh, all right, low expectations. We'll actually get into the plot of the movie now. We'll start to talk about it. And if you haven't seen Fantastic Four yet, this is your opportunity to bow out if you don't want the movie spoiled. That's the first and only spoiler warning I'm going to give in the history of this podcast, except maybe for like Batman vs. Superman, if we do that one around the time of its release. But because this is still out in theaters for now, I think it'll be drawn really quick. Just beware. Okay, so the film starts off very typical. You see a child version of Reed and a child version of Ben, and they're at the science fair. And confusing that?
No, the first one is like a day in elementary school where he's talking about what he wants to be when he grows up, and he says that he wants to teleport.
Okay.
And then the little tiny Reed Richards is talking about how it's theoretically possible to teleport, and his teacher is a dick.
Yeah, yeah. And then we cut to Ben and Reed out in, I think it's Reed's garage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're toying around with the whole thing that leads to the greater thing, that leads to things that, you know, help them move into another dimension for a short period of time, etc. And before we even get to
you
that.
Jumped. Oh, man.
Before we even get to that, though.
Yeah, but you already said another dimension.
Well, we're going to cover that more in depthly in a little bit. Tim Heidecker's in this movie.
Spilled beans.
Tim Heidecker.
Oh, right. It's his dad.
Yeah.
I forgot.
His appearance, in my opinion, elevated the movie. More so than Greg Turkington's appearance in Ant-Man.
Thoughts? So then, Reed are shown present day at a science fair where they are giving a presentation a presentation to passersby about their teleportation device.
They have to bribe a kid to get his little model airplane or whatever.
Yeah, because they forgot a model car, so they teleported some other kid's model airplane, and then they bring it back and it's got sand on it. And they get yelled at because this is a science fair and it's not a magic show.
Even though they failed at the science fair, they didn't get the verdict that they were hoping for from the judges. They're approached by Dr. Franklin Storm, a.k.a. Reg E. Caffey. That's the actor's name. I thought he was pretty good. And Sue, a.k.a. Kate Mara. And they get approached to join this project that they're working on. They want to fund this potential dimension exploration.
Right. So this is when Reed and Ben are given the initial information that the teleportation device doesn't actually teleport them across Earth, but into another dimension, which is what Dr. Storm and Sue want to explore. They're trying to reach the other dimension, and so far they can send things there, but they can't bring them back, which is why they need Reed.
And Ben is just shunned. He's cast aside.
There.
He's not really part of it, which deviates a little bit from Fantastic Four history. You see the 1994 Roger Corman Fantastic Four, and he's just as involved as Reed. Same thing with the 2005 version with Michael Chiklis. Man. He was involved. And not in this version. You know, they don't really give Jamie Bell much to do at all. Not just as a character, but as an actor. I think he has maybe 6 lines throughout the entire movie. He's very quiet. And even as the Thing, you know, we don't get much from him.
Okay, so Reed goes to work with Dr. Storm and her in their lab on their teleportation device. And then there's a scene where Sue and Reed have this really awkward conversation in the library where Reed approaches her while she's listening to music, and then they have this like super random conversation about how she likes music because there are patterns and patterns are kind of her thing. And that's basically the end of the conversation. And then it's not brought up for another while after that. So while Reed is working in the lab with Dr. Storm and Sue, they start to try to establish a relationship between Sue and Reed, in that they show a couple of like cutaways of them laughing together, and there's another conversation that they have where Reed is just kind of like, so you were adopted, and Sue's like, yeah.
It's very awkwardly shoehorned in there, like, so you have black parents, do ya?
Right.
it's like, okay. I mean, I guess they have to do that, but I mean, just common sense dictates that she was probably adopted. Although there are instances where the mother was white or something. It could have been one black kid, one white kid. I don't know. That's incredibly rare, though. So is developing powers after going into another dimension, but we'll get to that.
But I think that they were trying to establish a history for the characters to like give them further, like, more depth, but it just kind of falls flat in my opinion.
Yeah, the conversation doesn't work.
No, it's real. They're really just shallow and superficial.
And we also meet Toby Kebbell's Victor Von Doom, who's kind of like, I guess he's supposed to be a dick, but he's not really.
So Reed asks about him, and he says, oh, does he go here too? And Sue says, it's a long story.
Yeah, they're trying to like set him up as this kind of negative presence, but it doesn't quite work.
Right, and I don't think they ever really, like, they don't take the time to explain that or what she meant by that.
No, but, I mean, I implied that they might have had a relationship at one point, and then
right,
because of the whole working situation, nobody left. And that's just an awkward point.
Right. But it doesn't, it also doesn't really, I don't know.
It doesn't, it doesn't, it's pointless. It's purposeless.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things.
I think it's like you establish some sort of like deviant status with Victor, but then it's going further than that. But in addition to meeting Victor, we also meet Johnny, who, when we first see him, is like,
he's street racing.
Yeah, he's street racing, causing trouble or something. And then his dad goes to bail him out. And he's like, they get into an argument about how Johnny keeps messing up. And he's like, get his act together. And so Dr. Storm tells Johnny that he's going to come work in the lab for him.
He basically grounds him to another dimension is what the punishment is. And he's just like, oh, okay, I'll do that. But
yeah, so
he's like 25 or something like that, though. I mean, what? I don't know, yeah, but continue.
I mean, we can talk about it a little bit later if you want to talk about our impression of each of the characters. But like, I just find something really interesting and like off about the idea that Johnny's such a troublemaker. And then as soon as his dad says, you're going to come work in the lab, and
he just falls in line.
Yeah, he just sort of like, he drops his attitude. There's no like smart ass remarks from there on out. He just kind of like is okay.
Mm-hmm. So they do a test run with a chimpanzee that looks awfully similar to Caesar from Planet of the Apes. I think that was some leftover special effects or motion capture that they decided to apply to that. And it's a success. The chimpanzee comes back in one piece, unlike, we'll say, in The Fly, where the test run is all fucking microwave to shit, where it's just like a goopy puddle. So good for the chimpanzee. And they decide, you know what, we got to test it with humans now, only natural. But we have a government official by the name of Mr. Allen, which is a real, he doesn't have a first name. I looked it up on IMDb, played by Tim Blake Nelson, who's kind of wasted here. If you want to see him in a good performance, check out As I Lay Dying, directed by James Franco. And he says, no, I don't think so. You guys aren't going to do this. We're going to hand this over to NASA, which would make sense if the government actually still funded NASA and was into exploration of sorts. But again, we're just going to roll with it. And okay.
After that, the group, which is Reed, Johnny, and Victor, are all drinking.
They're having a pity party is what they're doing.
Yeah, they're drinking and getting drunk because they're pissed off because them as the nerds, they never get to have any fun. And it's always like the big, strong astronaut people who like step in and get all the glory.
Why are you like portraying the astronauts as jocks though? Like, I don't think that's how the dialogue unfolded.
I think it is like, because they started talking about Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong and how they got all the glory, and mm-hmm. then the scientists who built the machinery to take them there didn't. So I think that in their minds, even though like the astronauts are clearly probably more qualified professionals than they are in order to undertake this mission, and in their minds it's another case of like, oh, the jock gets all the glory.
I didn't see that comparison, but I can understand the kind of push and pull, I guess, of that. I thought this was probably some of the strongest dialogue in the movie, and let me just mm-hmm. state that the dialogue, just the entire scripting, it felt like a rough draft. It all seemed very unpolished to me.
Yeah, and the delivery felt kind of like a run through too. It was all just it was all very muted and weird. And
yeah, it could have been done better considering the talent on board, but I don't think it was. I don't think it was outright bad either. It just kind of was like, you can do better than that. You know what I mean? But we'll get into that a little bit later on and why that may have been the case. Here's something that I take a little bit of grief with. It's just so out of the blue that Victor is like, he's drunk and he's just thinking, you know what, why don't we just go and do it anyway? You know, even though they have people monitoring the whole area, as we saw, he's just like, fuck it. You know what, let's just go to another dimension real quick. Right. And nobody really protests it. Like, they go along with it after maybe about a minute or so. And then Reed decides to just randomly hit up Ben and he's like, oh, hey, I'm not doing this without you, da 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 da. He's trying to get him to go along like it's a fucking joyride to Taco Bell or something. And, you know, eventually, despite initial reluctance, he shows up and they all get in the machine and whoop, off to a parallel reality.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's supposed to be like a is supposed to speak to the fact that Ben is really loyal to Reed, and he puts a lot of stake in what Reed says. He trusts him. If Reed says that it's good, he'll go, despite the fact that Reed is like pissed drunk.
I got the vibe that Ben was like gay and in love with his best friend or something. Maybe that was just me.
That's definitely just you.
That's how it seemed. He was like, I don't know, just the way that Jamie Bell's performance played out. I didn't get that from Michael Chiklis. Maybe I just have Billy Elliot on my mind. I don't know. But that's how I thought the character was played out. I know, but he was a little femmy. So what do you think of the fact that they decided to change up instead of the Fantastic Four or the Five? Let me restart. What do you think of the fact that they decided to make it cross-dimensional travel instead of going into outer space?
I think it's interesting. I don't have an issue with it, except I take issue with the way that it was done.
I don't have a problem with the way that it was done, and I thought that it was a really progressive and better idea than, again, send five people into outer space, and for some reason the radiation gives them all unique powers. I thought they handled the origin a lot better than the other two films. And even the comic books, the Ultimate Comics included, although that is kind of similar. But I have a problem with the reality, the universe that they break into. It's too Earth-like, in my opinion. It's kind of like a volcanic... do you remember that volcano planet from Revenge of the Sith?
No.
It was a lot like that, where Obi-Wan Kenobi and evil Anakin are having that lightsaber fight, except... You know, take that whole landscape and dye it green, basically.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're not going to another planet. They're going to another reality that overlays right. our own.
Did they say that? That it overlays our... Well, I guess how they jumped in and out. Okay. Yeah, but even so, it's another dimension. So why would everything be physical? Why wouldn't it be something completely incomprehensible?
Because they're making a movie to be digested by the masses. Like, what do you... I don't know.
Really I would prefer, like, a fog planet with nothing fog and just abstract planet. Clouds of
so
whatever.
So then what, they just, like, float around?
They would just float around, yeah. That's what I would prefer.
All right.
That's probably more realistic. Just saying.
What? There's no way to say that's more realistic.
I have
you
been
have no
to
idea.
A number of dimensions
anyway,
in my
okay,
day.
So they're all... on this other dimension. Victor is like jizzing in his pants over the fact that they finally made it. He's like totally jazzed about it. And then he starts walking off. He kneels down where you see cracks in like the earth like surface where there's this green glowy.
What did you take this as? Because I took it as energy in its purest form, like life spawned from this. This is like the raw materials of everything that creates anything with consciousness.
I don't know. Well, so this was my whole thing going all the way back to when Reed starts working with Dr. Storm and Sue on this project. I feel like they don't do enough of like the work in establishing this as a believable concept. Like they don't take the time to like explain anything that's happening to you. It's all sort of just like you see the shots where they're trying to establish relationships between people and stuff like that. And it's and then up until they get to the other dimension and thereafter, I feel like they don't work into it any of like the background or this the science on why anything happens the way that it does or what they're doing. And that I find annoying. I don't know.
Did they ever give the alternate universe a name?
No.
Nothing? Okay.
I
hate having to use the same two like descriptions of it over and over again, but whatever. So they kind of breach their bounds a little bit. They maybe explore a little bit too much and shit goes awry because Victor just can't keep his hands off of that green sludge. And you see the ground start to crumble a little bit and Victor gets swallowed by that raw energy. Johnny, Ben, and Reed make it back to their portal on time.
Narrowly.
But then Johnny is presumably burnt to death, and Ben is crushed by rocks, and Reed is just kind of there. And Sue picks up on the fact that they're trying to re-enter their reality. So she's trying to help out, and for some reason she rushes to the platform because, you know, that makes sense. And as a result, she gets zapped by that radiation, those waves, and we cut to black. Reed wakes up, and it's probably the most embarrassing special effects sequence I've seen since The Incredible Hulk.
So what's happening? He wakes up. His arms
he wakes up. He's contained. He's on a...
Yeah. And the people, table. There are people behind like a glass barrier asking him if he can move his hands. And then they give him more drugs and he goes back to sleep. And then we cut, I think, to Dr. Storm asking a government official about the status of his children. And then they cut to Johnny, who's restrained and just sort of like burning. And then cut to Sue, who's fading in and out of invisibility.
Yeah, well, we find out that they're not dead, obviously.
Yeah.
So we see Johnny Storm as well, and he's just constantly on fire.
I just said that.
Oh, I thought you only said Sue.
No.
And we see the thing, and we see Ben Grimm.
We don't see him until after, right? Don't they? They kind of allude to it, but they don't show it until Reed wakes up.
They cover the other two first.
Right, so... And then, so then Reed wakes up and he is trying to escape, and he's crawling through like the air ducts, and he gets to where they're holding Ben Grimm, and he sees him and he says something along the lines of like, I'm sorry, I'll come back for you. And that's where you sort of get your first glimpse of Ben Grimm as the thing.
How did you feel about the fact that they went with an all CGI thing after Michael Chiklis wore essentially a styrofoam bodysuit, and the very first guy, I don't even know the actor's name, wore something pretty similar to that.
Unlike you, I don't have very strong feelings about the subject. So how did you feel about
it? I thought it was trash. I thought it was lazy. And just, you know what? This movie's not going to hold up anyway. No one's going to go out and rewatch it. It's not going to become a classic on home video. So I guess I don't have that much of an issue with it at the end of the day. But if this movie had lived up to everyone's expectations and was like Dark Knight caliber, it would look like shit in 2 years. It would look as bad as Ang Lee's Hulk. It would not be good. See, there's no point to doing that. You have a... Fantastic Four probably had something like $120 million budget. And I'm guessing that. And, you know, I can't say that for certain. I can go on the IMDb and look it up. I'm not going to do that. But how fucking hard is it to just build a suit, like a latex suit, styrofoam, whatever you need, and just put Jamie Bell in that and have him do voiceover work after the fact instead of just wasting money on CGI and motion capture? It's just pointless to me. I don't think you should use CGI unless you absolutely need to. And in those instances, don't even use it that much. Like if you need an explosion or something, have half actual explosion and maybe CGI around that or something, you know? You don't need to be gratuitous with that. But they're not going to listen to me. They don't, my opinion doesn't matter here. So the thing sucks, basically, is what I'm saying. But I'm glad he's not wearing pants because that's just ridiculous. I hate it when the Hulk wears pants. I hate it when Michael Chiklis's thing wore pants. Stupid. It's so stupid.
His thing.
And the thing does not have a thing. Did you notice that?
No.
He has no cock. It's just a mound. It's a rock mound. That's really sad for him. I wonder why he's always pissed off.
Any hoozlebees. So they, anyway, they show the thing, and they show Reed is escaping. He's apologetic.
He's so heroic, just leaving all his friends behind to be captive.
They decide that they need to find him. Which this cues a conversation, this cues a reference to the conversation that happened earlier in the movie between Sue and Reed. And Dr. Storm says they can't find him because they can't discern a pattern. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. So then you cut to Sue in some like control room looking at a map of where they've caught glimpses of Reed. And she's listening to music and she figures out a pattern in order to find him.
And I do like what they toy with here because I don't think it's been done before where Reed has the ability to stretch his face muscles and create basically a new image for himself that only vaguely resembles his actual self. I thought that was actually pretty inventive on the filmmaker's behalf, but I don't like that. I didn't like the fact that he was kind of like on the lam, but also tracking Ben, even though he's like with the military. Like, how did you expect that to work out for you? Like, I don't understand. But so eventually Reed and Ben, aka the Thing,
they get into a kerfuffle.
I don't think that's a word.
It's a word.
It's not a word.
They get into a kerfuffle. They get into a fight, and they smash up a bunch of trees in like the rainforest or some shit. Mm-hmm. And
long story short, Reed goes along with the plan. And they're all back at the lab. I feel like they have maybe two locations total for this fucking movie. It's like you have that general area, the workspace, and then you have the universe, and then you have this brief, you know, I'm not going to say kerfuffle, that takes place in the outdoors, and that's it. Like,
that's
they,
three.
They alternate actually between a whopping five different locations throughout all 100 minutes of the film. Mm-hmm. We get Reed back, and they essentially go along with reopening the portal and trying it out with a new set of explorers.
They show up in this other dimension.
Well, let's not jump to that right away. I did want to address the fact that this feels more like a second act, not the conclusion to the movie. So we get the fact that, you know, they're going to re-explore this. They're going to reopen the space-time continuum and jump into a new dimension. And we're like, okay, that's setting up something else. And it does set up something else, but then nothing happens after that. So you have a new set of, I don't want to call them astronauts. What would you call them?
Might as well just call them astronauts.
All right, well, fine. We're going to call them astronauts just for
explorers,
the sake of...
Explorers. Exploradoras.
I've been overusing the word explore and explorer. So whatever. We'll call them astronauts. So they go into the dimension, and not much has changed, if I can recall.
Well, though, Reed made a comment that it looked different. I think it was brighter.
Right.
It was more orangey, I think.
Yeah. And
but they don't tell you the significance of that, in case you were wondering.
Why would they? Well, what purpose would that serve? So the astronauts are searching around this alternate dimension, and eventually they come across a cloaked Victor Von Doom.
Where'd he get the cloak? I don't know either.
It must have just, I don't know, the green sludge made it for him. It dyed his uniform or something. I have no idea. But how did you feel about his appearance in this movie? Because he takes on a very different look from what we've seen in the past. And it's more in line with Superman 3, where there was this cyborg, which was essentially in place of Brainiac, that Richard Pryor had a hand in creating for this really wealthy British white guy. And it went off the hinges and got out of control and I think possessed a woman, and the face was all metallic and it scared the shit out of me as a kid. So for that reason, I don't think I had as much of a problem with this Dr. Doom look as, we'll say, every other hardcore Marvel fan who was like, his look sucks, I can't get into it. I thought it was cool. And I like the fact that his year spent surrounded by that green sludge, not having to... Well, let me just clarify real quick. Because he got abandoned there, and again, we are to presume that that green energy is the raw materials that, I guess, create life or build life. He survived all that without having to eat, drink, sleep, or serve any kind of basic human function. It just kept him going. And he developed strange powers as a result of that. Mm-hmm. So what happens next is they bring him. Do they bring him, or does he voluntarily go? It's a little bit of a blur for me, but
I mean they don't like force him or anything like that. I think somebody comes back like walking towards the ship with him, with Victor like draped over his shoulder kind of, and they're like limping towards it together. So I don't think they force him, but I wouldn't go as far as to say that. Oh no, because Victor said, you came back, I knew you'd come back.
So he eventually is drawn out of that dimension and back into our world. And he doesn't like that.
No.
So I don't understand why he would even do that to begin with. But he's in this situation now where he's back to his home reality, but he has no interest in actually residing here. He wants to go back to the green sludge and the volcano planet of Revenge of the Sith. So what does he do? He starts blowing up people's heads, which is pretty strange for a PG-13 movie that was marketed toward kids, but I'm cool with it.
Kids gotta learn sometime.
That heads randomly explode?
Yep.
Okay. I can go along with that. Again, very Cronenberg-esque, kind of like Scanners. It's just head pops. So Dr. Doom is just a lunatic. I guess the time spent in that alternate reality also made him insane or just changed the dynamics of his psychosis. Things get a little muddy in terms of his motive, because not only does he want to go back, but he just decides out of the blue that he wants to suck this reality into his reality and destroy everything that's around. What is the precedent for this?
I have no idea, but he starts up the machine again and he plops back into the other reality, and it creates
a wormhole.
He sets up like some sort of pillar thing, and then there's just like this and then there's just like this big zhuzh of
a zhuzh. Is that the technical term?
Yeah.
A zhuzh.
It's a big zhuzh of
and they have a kerfuffle while that zzz is sucking things away.
Anyway, there's like this big pillar of light, and it creates like this weird wormhole type thing where like the earth is falling into the new reality. Which, again, they don't explain why he's doing that or like what he's doing, but he says like my world must prevail, even if that means Earth must die.
He gets all. Here's another thing too. It's very obvious that the reports that Fox brought in a different director or a replacement and a different set of writers for the third act, and even call it that, are true. Because everyone gets really comic booky. Like, Dr. Doom has these really shitty, stereotypical, like, supervillain lines. Like, and they come out of nowhere. It's like, I expected a different future for us, Sue. Like, what are you talking about? And then in a fight, you know, the Thing's punch toward Dr. Doom, he says it's clobbering time. And it's just like, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit at all.
It doesn't fit the rest of the movie.
So,
and it especially doesn't fit the rest of the portrayal by J.U. Bell of
Ben Grimm. No, he says it with like a smirk.
It's clobbering time.
I cringed. It was so bad.
It was bad. But then, so it was, what really gets me is, so after there's that zhuzh of light and the wormhole is created, the four, Ben, Sue, Johnny, and Reed, follow Victor through the wormhole. Johnny flies and Sue, like, does her little force field bubble thing and transports her, the Thing, and Reed. I guess it's not really important. But anyway, so they go through the thing and then they get into a fight with Victor to try and stop him from destroying the Earth. Obviously, because they're not just going to let it happen, right? But what really bothers me about this is that it seems from your perspective when you're watching from, like, this reality, it seems like this reality is being eaten up really quickly by this wormhole. And then it feels like the whole conflict takes a really long time to play out. And I know it's like not that much time if you just look at like how many minutes and seconds it takes for it to play out, but it's just like in the middle of this, like, the Earth is in jeopardy, it's being eaten by the wormhole, it's like deteriorating rapidly. Reed stops everything to give this giant speech to Sue, Johnny, and Ben about how, like, they need to work together.
It was so forced.
It was really weird. And immediately after that speech, Ben decides to give up all of his hatred towards Reed and his abandonment issues towards Reed just at the drop of a hat.
Because it's clobbering time. What do you want? What do you want from them?
This is like the moment where they're supposed to come back together and everything, but it's just so unbelievable.
Yeah.
We also forgot to mention Dr. Storm.
Oh yeah, he gets killed by Victor.
He dies.
then what is the point?
I don't know.
Victor has no purpose in killing Dr. Storm. It's just a dick move that is used to give the Fantastic Four, if you can even call them that, a motive to follow him into the wormhole, I guess you would call it, and try and defeat him. Like, yeah. You don't even need to do that. Just close it up. Let him live there. He'll be happy.
Well, that's the thing is I don't really understand at all why Victor needed to kill this reality. There's no reason for him to. If he can transport himself there,
it's
he
like,
can just live there and it's fine.
Yeah, it's like Fox said, you know what, he's not sinister enough. We need kill the Earth. You know, that's original.
I mean, he has to be doing something in order for them to fight against him, I guess, but like, God, give me more.
You know what? It seems like there was a lot of interesting dynamics here that could have made for a really great film and a really original superhero movie. And then Fox was just like, we need it to be more comic booky. And they implemented some really standard tropes that have been in every single Marvel movie and a good portion of DC films that just didn't need to exist here. Like Josh Trank, I get the vibe, wanted to make something that felt more like an 80s sci-fi film or 70s sci-fi film. And those are the elements I love about this movie. The fact that they're crossing over into another dimension, that they come across Doom and he's all fucked up and has a weird metal glowing face. And he, at first, he doesn't have destruction on his mind. He just wants to go back to his little corner of reality, and he'll do anything to do that, you know? But they made it messy and they ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like the movie. I still like the vast majority of it just because of those ideas. But before we even get into how we feel personally about that, why don't we just summarize the ending? So Doom is defeated, of course, because it is clobbering time.
Yes.
Smirk, winky face.
And then they go back to something else that bothered me is they go back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity. And no, they go back to they go back to their own like dimension or whatever. But they don't like, I don't really know how they did it. Was the machine there? And also, if the machine was there, how did Ben fit in it?
Good point.
Oh no, wait, did they fly through the wormhole again?
Yes. Yeah, they did that.
Okay. Just kidding, you can erase all of that.
Okay. No. So we have another flash forward where they're in a government compound specifically built for them, and they get their ways essentially by vaguely threatening these officials, which I believe are the FBI, right?
I don't know.
They're on area, they're at Area 27 or something like that, 37?
Something like 40, that.
I don't know. I don't care. It's not Area 51,
no.
Which I don't know. Anyway.
Can I
go ahead.
Insert here on their this is something that I have beef with, and it doesn't originate at this point in the story, obviously, but when they are shown arriving to the government facility, Johnny is flying and Sue does her bubble thing. But what bothers me is that in all of the like the training sequences that they did before, she had to hold her breath in order to be in the like the force field to fly, I think because there's no oxygen source while they're inside it. So how does she fly long distances with her and two other people in there? They would all die. They would all asphyxiate.
I actually have a very scientific answer to that question. Lazy writing. So in the last couple of seconds of the movie, it's like, hey, we need a name.
Oh my God. Oh,
and
my
I could
God.
See you like, you're like, stop, stop, stop while we're watching
it's
it.
The most cringeworthy piece of dialogue I have ever witnessed in my life.
This is like the writer saying, hey, you know, they're going to come up with a name and this is going to imply a future for them as the fantastic, but they don't even say it. They don't say it. They spare us the torment of having to hear that uttered from Miles Teller's mouth.
Somebody says like, well, this is fantastic. And Rude is like, what'd you say?
Can you repeat that? shut up, douche. Be quiet. Like, ugh, enough. It's really, it's not great. It's not good.
Really bad. It's a really, really, really bad way to end this movie.
I agree.
Completely unnecessary.
I'm surprised that they didn't end it with them winding up in the X-Men universe. I think that would, considering they had plans, I don't know if they currently do, but at one point there was talks of combining that Fantastic Four with Bryan Singer's X-Men and doing a crossover film. I don't know if that's going to happen now, but if it does happen,
they're just in such different leagues. It just,
I don't know. I don't think it would fit well.
No.
This Fantastic Four movie seems like it should have been isolated. Like, if it was done well, it's not the type of superhero movie that would mesh with other superhero movies. It would be like the Dark Knight trilogy in its own respective way. And that's the only time I will compare Josh Trank's Fantastic Four to the Dark Knight. But overall thoughts on the movie, what did you like about it, if anything? What did you dislike about it? And in a word, describe Fantastic Four 2015.
In a word?
In a word.
Okay, well, I'm going to start with my overall thoughts on the movie. I felt ultimately like this was a lot of really extensive build up to nothing. I feel like most of the movie was exposition, and then the conflict happened and there was really no resolution. It just kind of like, well, they defeated Doom, and so that's the end. So it was a lot of story for no real payout or no real point. And at the end, I felt kind of like, I don't want to say it was a waste of time, because that's not really how I feel. I just can't really think of what I want to say to put my point across, but it just felt like there wasn't really a purpose to the story. Mm-hmm. It didn't really move. It didn't really go anywhere. And I thought it overall just kind of fell flat. I felt a disconnect from the characters, and I felt like there was a disconnect between the characters themselves. I feel, as I mentioned earlier, like when Reed was at the lab working on the machine and they showed like cutaways of him and Sue laughing, at those points, they don't really let you in on the joke. And so you don't get to build that connection with them, and you don't get to see them really make important connections to each other.
There's no camaraderie.
Yeah.
And I'll even say that there was for the two, Tim Story 2005 and I think 2007 Fantastic Fours. Like, I could buy them as a group.
Right.
This group, even though they, I think, had it been done correctly, their personalities could have really meshed well. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't believe it here.
And even between Sue and Johnny, they're supposed to have this really deep history because they were raised together. And obviously there are points where there's dialogue to suggest that Sue is really concerned about Johnny because he's a troublemaker and all of that. And when he wants to allow himself to be weaponized, she expresses concern in what she says over him. But they're
so detached.
Yeah.
They're not like it doesn't feel like siblings at all.
No, and her delivery doesn't really, and her demeanor doesn't really sell to me that she cares that deeply about him. And as a result, I don't care about their connection, and I don't care about them, is basically all that it is.
Ooh, and back turn to well, the storms.
And it's the same thing, like, not to like, drive on and on and on about the same point, but it's the same thing with Ben and Reed. You're supposed to feel like there's this really strong bond between them as friends because they go back so far, and Ben was the only one who believed in Reed when he really needed someone to. So I can see that. I can see what they're trying to say, but I just don't feel it. And so as a result, I feel really disconnected from the story. I don't feel invested in it. I don't feel invested in them. And that's why when Dr. Storm meets his demise, I don't really feel anything.
A lot of the parts of the movie that I liked, that I really enjoyed, were all probably better in concept and could have been executed much better. But I love a lot of the ideas here. And for that reason, I don't view this movie as harshly as others have. I think the first 45 minutes, in spite of wishy-washy performances, is really solid. I think it's a pretty good movie up until we actually meet the quote-unquote Fantastic Four. And I love the idea of Doom being this weird interdimensional creature spawned on Earth and then absorbed by this green sludge in another dimension and just wanting to go back home. Again, I went over the fact that they fucked that up by trying to make him a little bit more diabolic. And at the end of it, I walked away feeling that my interest in the concepts and ideas put forth here was stronger than my disdain for the overall flaws of the feature. So I did not hate it. I did not dislike it. And I think it is probably the most enjoyable Fantastic Four of the four.
I'm not someone who gets like super jazzed about different approaches to the like a known story. I don't know so much of the background of the Fantastic Four. I'm not that well versed. So I'm more of a person who gets interested in a movie based on the connections that I feel to characters. And I felt a stronger connection to the characters in the other films that we watch. So for me, this rates sort of at the bottom of the barrel because I can't connect to the movie and I can't connect to the characters. So I just find it really hard to be invested in this at all.
I'll agree with you that the characters didn't hook me in as well as the four from the two previous features did. But again, the ideas put forth just trump all of that, in my opinion. Because I've seen this story so many times before, and I know it doesn't quite get to you as much as it does me, but I would like these concepts applied to just any film. It wouldn't necessarily have to be the Fantastic Four for me to be interested in it. But the fact that it is gives it a lot of cred, in my opinion. Because most, you know, you look at any Marvel feature film from Marvel Studios, and you get the same kind of generic, moderately funny, no consequences, cartoonish movie again and again and again, except for maybe The Winter Soldier, which I guess has a more serious tone to it. But for the most part, you look at the Marvel Studios films, and they all blend in. You don't see directors applying a direct style onto these movies. I'm hoping DC changes that, and it looks like they will, with Zack Snyder doing Batman vs. Superman and then David Ayer for Suicide Squad. I can appreciate what Josh Trank wanted to bring to the table, although the script is not good. The script's not great, and it probably would have worked better as a comic book.
I just really feel like all the way through they should have given us more explanation, and I feel like that would have made a world of difference.
But you just said a second ago that it was too much explanation and not enough action.
No, not like more backstory, but just like insert little tidbits of like, why is this happening? Why does Doom want to destroy the Earth? Why?
Overall, it could have been a more fulfilling experience, I agree. What would you like to see happen with the future of the Fantastic Four franchise? Do you want to see a sequel that's put into better hands? Do you want to see another reboot? Do you want to see any Fantastic Four follow-up, or should it just die? Because they've tried three times and it hasn't worked yet.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't like to see a sequel, I don't think, unless there's like some overhaul. But even then, like I don't think I'd really be interested in seeing it after watching this. And I think that the sentiment is going to carry through. So I don't think that even if they did a sequel, I don't think that their audience is there. So I wouldn't like to see that. But I would like, I guess I would like to see a reboot.
Another reboot, though? This would be most failed attempts at getting a comic book franchise off the ground. Three reboots, four different series.
Right, so you just want it to die? I mean, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't be like upset if it died, but anything's going to happen, that would be my preferred route.
Nearly 40 years ago, Star Trek the movie came out, and it was a disaster. Everyone has disowned it. Nobody goes back and watches the original Star Trek film. But what they do watch is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. In this movie, revitalized the entire series and gave life to a number of different sequels. And Star Trek is still remembered to this day. And there's even new movies directed by J.J. Abrams and I guess some other guy. I think his name is Robert Orca. I could be wrong about that. Point is, they decided, you know what, this series isn't dead yet, and they tried it a second time. I think they can do that with Fantastic Four, with these four actors. You give them a quality script that people have spent a lot of time working on, and a director with a vision, and I think my cat is meowing.
Isn't that kind of what happened with Mad Max? Wasn't the first one? I'm just asking. Like, I'm just to ask. But isn't that what happened kind of with Mad Max? Wasn't the first one, like, super unrelated to the second one? People were like, is this even the same
series? No, it was almost like a remake of the first one, but with a bigger budget. What happened was the first Mad Max bombed in the United States, so they renamed it The Road Warrior. Well, the sequel was renamed in the United States The Road Warrior, so it wouldn't have any kind of connection to the original Mad Max. But it was essentially, I don't want to, maybe it was a reboot for the time, but it had basically Mel Gibson still attached to the Mad Max role, and it was the same concepts and story, I guess, but it felt very different tonally, and there were detached elements to it.
I was going to say, I mean, I never saw the original Mad Max or anything, but I was just reading some people who were, I was reading a conversation online between people who were talking about it, and they felt like the first two like weren't connected very much. I don't know. So they felt like different series. But I don't know.
It's about the same comparison to be made between the Mad Max that was previous to this past one, Fury Road, and Fury Road, essentially, which is in its own regard both a sequel and a reboot. But with Fantastic Four, I think you can do another one and pull it off if you have the right people behind the camera. That being said, if there is a second Fantastic Four with these four actors, the only way that that's happening is if it's a crossover with X-Men, period. I don't see that happening any other way, unless they decide to go and do that anyway and do the Batman versus Superman thing and just replace all four of them. And it's like, oh, hey, these people are dimensional travelers. So it's like a vague, but like a vague sequel to that. Kind of like what they did with The Incredible Hulk in Hulk 2003. So they could do that. Otherwise, just give it back to Marvel. They've tried. Fox has tried three times. And Roger Corman had it before then. He failed too. Nobody has figured out the formula to making a decent Fantastic Four movie. Let Marvel have it.
You know what's weird? I just have this really hard time fitting, or like in my head, putting Spider-Man with any of them. And I know that that's like not right, but I just have this...
In general or in that movie universe?
In the movie universe.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem to jive.
Well, neither does Daredevil, though, if you think about it. Mm. So they're taking very individual characters that...
I think it's because Peter Parker, I think it's because he wears a mask.
They all wear masks.
No, but he wears like a whole thing.
And Iron Man isn't? Ant-Man?
No,
that's Captain America?
Suit.
Although, I don't like the fact that they have Captain America out of mask more often than not. Like, Chris Evans' face is more profitable to them than Captain America helmet. But I totally see what you're saying, though. It doesn't seem to fit. Like, what is even the point of a Spider-Man in that universe if you have someone like Iron Man and Captain America and they all basically live in New York? Like, what do we really need this 15-year-old hanging around with his fucking knapsack of a mask? What are you doing here? I am interested in seeing how they integrate him into that. And apparently he's going to have like a homemade outfit, kind of like in the first movie where he's got the whole wrestling getup, Tobey Maguire. And I think that would be cool, but they're going to give him a professional outfit as designed by Tony Stark midway through the film. Or so I hear. Spoilers. You know, or fan fiction, one of those two. Why don't we close out this podcast by giving our definite rating on Fantastic Four 2015. We'll start off with you. On a scale of 4 stars, how many does Fantastic Four get?
2.
2. Okay. So it's on par, I think, with...
My word, by the way, you said I had to give it 1 word earlier and then I didn't. Underwhelming.
So why don't you give it 2 stars and not 1? Because you clearly disliked this movie.
I disliked it, but I didn't hate it. I feel disconnected from the characters. All that's true. But
Are you sure you don't want to give it one star?
It just wasn't, it wasn't unwatchable.
What would you consider unwatchable?
The spirit.
The spirit is the bottom of the barrel for you.
Oh, yeah.
I have never seen The Spirit. I remember DVRing it maybe about 7 years ago because it was on Showtime, and I put it on for 5 minutes and I was like, no, I'm going to go do something else.
That was me, except I paid $12 to see it and I walked out.
Poor Frank Miller. He gets raked over the coals so often nowadays. Maybe not. Everybody is like in love with his rendition of Batman. Anyway, got off the point. So it gets 2 stars from you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it 3 stars. That's being generous. I know. But I don't think it's the worst Fantastic Four. I don't think it's the worst superhero movie ever made. The fact that it's at 9% on Rotten Tomatoes is fucking ludicrous. It's completely unwarranted. That movie should be at least in the 30% range. Just my opinion. Do you think the Rotten Tomatoes score stacks up to its actual quality?
No.
Let me just say that The Room, Tommy Wiseau's magnum opus, has a higher rating than that. Batman and Robin has a higher rating.
Yeah, but but there's just something like The Room for a lot of people hits the point where it's so bad that it doubles back to being good-ish, maybe. But this doesn't have the same quality. It's just very flat.
But I don't think it goes past the point of being unwatchable, though. I would watch this again in an instant.
But I think that is maybe the point. Like, it's just very flat. It's not like, oh, this is so, so bad. It's just flat.
What's worse, Fantastic Four 2015 or Spider-Man 3?
I plead the fifth.
I would watch this before Spider-Man 3. And keep in mind, I have not watched Spider-Man 3 since about the time it came out. So my opinion might change when we eventually get to the Spider-Man retrospective.
I think the difference is that, like, Spider-Man 3 was uncomfortable because Tobey Maguire just doesn't fit that aesthetic. And that's what, it was just really uncomfortable for me. But this wasn't, it's not the same sentiment.
So we have a 3-star rating on my end, 2 stars from Amy. Any closing thoughts on Fantastic Four?
Nope.
Are you glad to be finished now with the entire series? We've got all 4 out of the way.
Eh.
Eh? How would you stack it all? Like, what would you give as a rating for the entire quintet?
I don't feel prepared to give that answer.
Why?
Because I don't have the greatest memory ever, and I don't...
But surely you remember bits and pieces of every movie.
Yeah, but they were just so different, and they're bad in their own way, that I don't know if I can give the overall thing.
They were very tonally different. Like, the 1994 Fantastic Four was clearly, like, trauma, cheesy, over the top. And then you had the 2000s. Fantastic Four, which was clearly just cartoonish and family friendly, and then you have this one, which is going for a retro sci-fi approach. Overall, I would say that Fantastic Four is just not my favorite property, and I am not stoked, and I'm not really looking forward to any follow-ups, unless, again, like I said, they maybe cross it over with X-Men. I think you need some really talented people to fix this. It's a fucking mess. It's not good. So I'm glad we're done with it. Next up, we're going to be taking on a DC property for once. One with a smaller amount of films than the Fantastic Four. So we can get through that a little bit quicker. Any idea what you might want to cover from the DC canon?
I don't care.
You know what I think would be a great follow-up from Fantastic Four? Another cosmic entry in the comic book universe, Green Lantern, starring Ryan Reynolds, who is now playing Deadpool. Deadpool looks cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Deadpool does look cool.
Anyway, we'll talk about that another day. But that's been the Marvel DC retrospective for now. We'll see you for Green Lantern. And then it's back to another fucking 8 sequel Marvel series or something. I don't know. We'll see what comes after that. But until then, so long, folks.
Sayonara.
Thank you.